William Binney, about this issue of when it comes to snail mail, the old postal system, it's very tough for the government to intercept mail, except in times of war, particular situations. When it comes to phone conversations, land phone conversations, you need a warrant to be able to intercept phone conversations. But what about email? And what about the communication now that is really the dominant form that not only Americans, but many people around the world are communicate? What are the restrictions on the government in terms of email?
Well, after some of the laws they passed, like the Patriot Act and their secret interpretation of Section 215, which is my view, of course, is the same as Tom Drake's, is that that gives them license to take all the commercially held data about us. Which is exceedingly dangerous, because if you take that and put it into forms of graphing, which is building relationships or social networks for everybody, and then you watch it over time, you can build up knowledge about everyone in the country. And having that knowledge then allows them the ability to concoct all kinds of charges if they want to target you. Like in my case, they fabricated several charges and attempted to indict us on them. Fortunately, we were able to produce evidence that would make them look very silly in court, so they didn't do it. In fact, I was basically assembling evidence of malicious prosecution, which was a countercharge to them. So,
do you believe all emails the government has copies of in the United States?
I believe they have most of them. Yes.
And you're speaking from a position where you would know, considering your position in the National Security Agency.
Right. All they would have to do is put various NARIS devices at various points along the network, at choke points or convergent points where the network converges, and they could basically take down and have copies of most everything on the network.
Jacob, your email?
Well, I selectively chose to use certain public services like Sonic.net and Gmail, and I specifically did that so as to serve as a warning to other people. I didn't use it for anything interesting. Never once emailed Julian, for example, from those accounts. But the U.S. government again asserted in those cases, according to the Wall Street Journal, which is one way to find out about what's going on with you, they asserted that they have the right to all that metadata. And it is possible. On Monday, I had a little interaction with the FBI where they sort of hinted that maybe there might be a national security letter for one of my email accounts, which is also hosted by Google, specifically because I want to serve as a canary in the coal mine for other people.
A national security letter. It's believed the government has given out hundreds of thousands of those.
Yeah.
I have also written about NSLs. But if you get one, you are not allowed to talk about it on pain of something like up to 5 years in prison, even to mention that you were handed a national security letter that said turn something over.
That was the case of Nick Merrill, for example, who's a brave American who essentially fought and won the NSL that was handed down to him.
And the librarians of Connecticut who
yes.
were taking on the USA Patriot Act and didn't want to give information over about patrons in the library that the FBI wanted to get information on.
Right, absolutely. So an NSL, what's specifically scary about it is that all that is required is for an FBI agent to assert that they need one, and that's it. And you don't have a chance to have judicial review because you aren't the one served. Your service provider will be served, and they can't tell you, so you don't get your day in court.
Laura, can you set up this clip that
yeah,
we have?
Yeah, actually, what Jake was alluding to on Monday, there was a panel at the Open Society Institute, and there was a deputy general counsel of the FBI who was present, and Jake had the opportunity to question her about national security letters.
Are you including national security letters in your comment about believing that there is judicial oversight with the FBI's actions?
National security letters, administrative subpoenas have the ability to have judicial oversight, yes.
How many of those actually do have judicial oversight in percentage?
What do you mean by that?
Every time you get a national security letter, you have to go to a judge? Or?
No. As you well know, national security letters, just like administrative subpoenas, you don't have to go to a judge. The statute does allow for the person on whom those are served to seek judicial review. And people have done so.
And in the case of the third parties, such as, say, the 2703D orders that were served on my, according to the Wall Street Journal, my Gmail account, my Twitter account, and my internet service provider account, the third parties were prohibited from telling me about it. So how am I supposed to go to a judge if the third party is gagged from telling me that I'm targeted by you?
There are times when we have to have those things in place. So at some point, obviously, you became aware. So at some point, the person does become aware. But yes, the statute does allow us to do that. The statute allows us.
Now, Jacob, explain who she was again.
So my understanding is that she's the Deputy General Counsel of the FBI.
And the significance of what she has just said?
Essentially, what she says is, we are just and righteous because you get judicial review. But there are some cases where you don't, and we are still just and righteous. And you should trust us, because COINTELPRO will never happen again. That's what I heard from that. And in fact, later, someone asked about COINTELPRO and said, how
can we— The counterintelligence program that targeted so many dissidents in the 1970s.
Tried to get Martin Luther King Jr. to kill himself, for example. The FBI wrote him a letter and encouraged him to commit suicide. So for her to suggest that it is just and right and that we should always trust them sort of overlooks the historical problems with doing exactly that for any people in a position of power with no judicial oversight.
William Binning, what about the companies that are approached by the government to participate or facilitate the surveillance? Your sense of the degree of opposition that they're mounting, if at all? And also, has there been any kind of qualitative change since the Obama administration came in versus what the Bush administration was practicing?
Well, first of all, I don't think any of them opposed it in any way. I mean, they were approached to saying, you'll be patriotic if you support us. So I think they saluted and said, yes, sir, and supported them, because they were told it was legal, too. And then, of course, they had to be given retroactive immunity for the crimes they were committing. So,
and approved by President Obama.
and President Bush, yeah. It started with Bush, yeah.
And the differences in the administrations?
Actually, I think the surveillance has increased. In fact, I would suggest that they've assembled on the order of 20 trillion transactions about U.S. citizens with other U.S. citizens.
How many?
20 trillion.
And you're saying that this surveillance has increased, not only the—
Yes.
Targeting of whistleblowers like your colleagues, like people like Tom Drake, who are actually indicted under the Obama administration.
Right.
More times, the number of people who've been indicted are more than all presidents combined in the past.
Right. And I think it's to silence what's going on. But the point is the data that's being assembled is about everybody. And from that data, then they can target anyone they want.
Bill Binney, talk about Bluffdale, Utah. What is being built there?
Well, a very large storage device, basically, for remote interrogation and remote processing. That's the way I view that, because there's not enough people there to actually work the data there. So it's being worked somewhere else.
Where do you get the number 20 trillion?
Just by the numbers of telecoms, it appears to me, from the questions that CNET posed to them in 2006, and they published the names and what the responses were. I looked at that and said that anybody that equivocated was participating, and then estimated from that the numbers of transactions. That, by the way, estimate only was involving phone calls and emails. It didn't involve any queries on the net. Or any assembles, any financial transactions or credit card stuff, if they're assembling that. I do not know that.
And okay. the original allegations that you made in terms of the crimes being committed under the Bush administration in terms of the rights of American citizens, could you—
Well, I made that— I reported the crime when I was raided in 2007. And it was that Bush and Cheney and Hayden and Tenet conspired to subvert the Constitution and violate various laws that existed, the statutes at the time. And here's how they did it. And I was reporting this to the FBI on my back porch during the raid. And I went through Stellar Wind and told them what it did and what the information it was using and how they were spying on or assembling data to be able to spy on any American.
I want to go to a clip of Congressmember Hank Johnson. He's the Georgia Democrat questioning National Security Administration Director General Keith Alexander last month, asking him whether the NSA spies on U.S. citizens.
Does the NSA routinely intercept American citizens' emails?
No.
Does the NSA intercept Americans' cell phone conversations?
No.
Google searches?
No.
Text messages?
No.
Amazon.com orders?
No.
Bank records?
No.
What judicial consent is required for NSA to intercept communications and information involving American citizens?
Within the United States, that would be the FBI lead. If it was a foreign actor in the United States, the FBI would still have the lead and could work that with NSA or other intelligence agencies as authorized. But to conduct that kind of collection in the United States, it would have to go through a court order, and the court would have to authorize it. We are not authorized to do it, nor do we do it.
That was General Keith Alexander, the NSA director, being questioned by Democratic Congressmember Hank Johnson. Bill Binney, he's the head of your agency, of the NSA. You explain what he's saying, what he's not saying as well.
Well, I think it's part of it is a term, how you use the term intercept, as to whether or not what they're saying is we aren't actually looking at it, but we have it, you know, or whether or not they're actually collecting it and storing it somewhere.
So the mistake of the congressman was not to ask, are you collecting information?
Well, he also said things like, we don't collect against U.S. citizens unless we have a warrant. And then at the same time, he said that we don't, at the same interview, he said we don't have the capability to collect inside this country. Well, those are kind of contradictory.
Is he lying? Is General Keith Alexander lying?
I wouldn't, you know, the point is how you split the words. I wouldn't say lying. It's kind of avoiding the issue.
Jacob Applebaum, how does this relate to you, and how powerful is General Keith Alexander?
I was saying to Bill that I think he's probably the most powerful person in the world in the sense that—
More powerful than President Obama?
Well, sure. I mean, if he controls the information that arrives on Obama's desk and Obama makes decisions based on the things on his desk, what decisions can he make except the decisions presented to him by the people he trusts? And when the people he trusts are the military makes the decisions, then the civilian government is not actually in power.
Bill Binney, you're nodding your head.
Yes. For example, their responsibility is to interpret what they have and report up echelon. So, I mean, that's the responsibility of all the intelligence agencies. So they basically filter the information to what they believe is important, which is what they should do. Because, you know, they're occupied. It takes time for leaders to review material to make decisions. So they have to boil it down as best they can. So it's a function of their processing. But it is important that they do it correctly to make sure the information that gets there is correct and complete.
Is General Alexander more powerful than President Obama?
In the sense of presenting information for decision making, sure.
And Laura, the impact on journalists who have to go through what you've gone through the last few years just to be able to report what's going on with our government, the chilling effect that this has on maybe not on you but on many other journalists.
Sure. I mean, I feel like I can't talk about the work that I do in my home, in my place of work, on my telephone, and sometimes in my country. So it's the chilling effect is huge. It's enormous.
Do you keep your computers and telephones away from conversations you're having in a room?
Yeah, when we had a meeting with you, remember we told you we kicked all your cell phones and all your computers out of the room?
The wired phone, you unwired.
Yeah.
My cell phone, you didn't allow me to have it in the room, mm-hmm. and you made sure there were no computers
right.
in the room.
Right, because we wanted to talk about, because we were bringing William to New York. And
we have to leave it there, but we're going to go online right now at democracynow.org. We're going to continue this conversation with Bill Binney of the NSA, formerly with MNSA, Laura Poitras, and Jacob Applebaum, democracynow.org. I'm